Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
And that would be me. Good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company for another edition of Live on Air this Monday, the 20th of April. The year is flying. We haven't anything done. Have we anything done? Have we got anywhere? Here. Anyway, look, I have a nice program. I have a rather ambitious program this evening. I think I've got too much ready, but what we don't get to today, we can always get to next week. I'm going to be, as per usual, very shortly running down the famous Irish birthdays, those famous Irish people who will be celebrating their birthdays, or those birthdays we'll be marking in the coming week. I'm going to be talking as well to the Minister for the Diaspora, Ciarán Cannon is his name. I'll be talking to him about the role that his department is playing at the moment, as there are thousands of people, Irish people across the world, who may want to come home, or those that are happy where they happen to be and they're helping out in their communities, and the roles that the embassies across the world are playing as well. Ben Sweeney will be talking to me about government formation. It's over 11 weeks since we had our general election in Ireland. We don't have a government yet, but we're getting a little bit closer. Ben will give us more details. I'll be playing the number one song from this very day in Ireland back in 1987. And if we have time, I'm going to be talking to somebody about what people are learning at this particular time of lockdown or partial lockdown. And there is a new song that has just been released in Ireland, encouraging us to stay at home and stay alive. I hope to bring that to you today as well. Ambitious, isn't it? It is. So we better get on with it. Let's have a look at some of the famous birthdays happening this coming week. Well, sure, today. Let's start with today, shall we? The 20th of April. Shay Given, international goalkeeper, born in Lifford in County Donegal in 1976. The British newscaster Peter Snow was actually born in Dublin on this day in 1948. Conor Murray, the Munster and Ireland rugby player, born in Limerick in 1989. Alan Jukes, former Fine Gael leader, born in Dublin in 1945. And Margaret Anna Cusick, the founder of the Poor Clare's Order, was born in Dublin in 1829. Tomorrow, Tuesday, the 21st of April, Glenn Hansard, the singer, was born in Dublin in 1970. Lucy Kennedy, the broadcaster, born in Dublin in 1976. Ian Gibson, the writer, born in Dublin in 1939. And Maurice Walsh, novelist, born in Listowel in County Kerry in 1879. Wednesday, 22nd, Tim Pat Coogan, writer, broadcaster and critic, born in Dublin in 1935. Michael the O'Rahilly. Yeah, the O'Rahilly, great name, isn't it? Revolutionary, born in County Kerry in 1875. Thursday, the 23rd, Michael English, singer, born in County Kildare in 1979. I think he kind of exploded onto the scene during a Late Late special on younger people breaking into the music and entertainment world. Friday is the 24th, and a wonderful actor by the name of Aidan Gillen was born in Dublin in 1968. Enda Kenny, our former Taoiseach, born in Castlebar in County Mayo in 1951. Johnny McAvoy, great singer, you've heard him many times on the programme, born in 1945. And Claire Boylan, the writer, was born in 1948. Next Saturday, Peter Sutherland would have been celebrating his birthday, a former Attorney General. I think he was the youngest Attorney General the state has ever had. He was also a superb European commissioner. Well, he was born in 1946 and he died a number of years ago. And what a loss, because he was a great brain, he had a great mind and was able to bring people and things together very easily. Next Sunday is the 26th and Jimmy O'Dea, the actor and comedian, was born in Dublin in 1899. I recall a conversation with my good old pal Roger Comiskey, whom you've heard on the programme before, telling me that he would have met Jimmy O'Dea in Roger's father's shop. I think it was at Grafton Street. Anyway, I must get an old story off him for that. Ciara Kelly, the journalist and broadcaster, was born in 1971. And Derek Davis, poor old Derek, he was a great broadcaster and newsreader. He was born in County Down in 1948, a man that left us a long time ago now. So there we go. There's our famous Irish birthdays for this coming week. And if you happen to be celebrating your birthday, well, happy birthday to you. Or if somebody in your world is, happy birthday to them as well. Let's take a musical one, shall we? Indeed, Michael English celebrates his birthday on Thursday the 23rd. A singer from County Kildare. And here he is.
Wow. Wow. We're the two new people that's moved to the middle of the block. Wow. And we're the talk of the town, and don't you think we're not? Wow. For we've got love and happiness, people envy us, you see. for we found heaven right here on earth at 4033. Yeah, we found what most people are looking for, and it's not a lot of money to spend on a real fine car, but it's a window where a bird flies and sings so free. And there's a whole lot of windows in this little house at 4033. The 4,000 blocks proves what true love can do. Once a lonely place, but was so to me and you. All around the house you can see little children play, and they're not other people's kids, we're proud to say. They are the symbol of our love for all the world to see. They're part of heaven right here on earth at 4033. At all hours of the day you can see many people drive by for a look at the house they think fell from the sky. They say that this place wouldn't make them as happy as you and me. And now the whole town's trying to buy this house at 4033. The 4,000 blocks proves what true love can do. Once a lonely place, but was so to me and you. All around the house you can see little children play, and they're not other people's kids, we're proud to say. They are the symbol of our love for all the world to see. They're part of heaven right here on earth at 4033. We're not gonna sell our happy little home at 4033. I wouldn't take a pretty penny for the love we have at 4033.
Wow. I suppose you could call that a little ditty. That's Michael English from County Kildare. He celebrates his birthday on the 23rd, which is Thursday, so we wish him a very happy birthday. I'm going to take a quick break right now, come back to me just after that, and I will be joined by the Minister for the Diaspora, Kieran Cannon.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
As Minister for the Diaspora, I am particularly conscious of the many Irish communities around the world that are being affected by the COVID-19 crisis. While the government is working to assist thousands of Irish citizens stranded abroad to return to Ireland, I am conscious that many more of the global Irish are already at home and facing the serious challenges posed by this global pandemic. I want to assure you that although you are abroad, you are still in our thoughts as we collectively fight against this pandemic. I am not the Minister for the Diaspora, but Kieran Cannon TD is. And that is the opening paragraph of a statement that he released recently on Global Irish Newsletter. And the Minister joins me on the phone at the moment. Minister Cannon, good to talk to you and thanks for taking time to talk to us.
Likewise, Ger. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Not at all. You're Galway-based, so can we talk about Galway before we talk about the diaspora,
sure,
if you don't mind? Galway,
yes.
How has it been affected by COVID-19? How are the people managing?
Well, everyone's managing well. Everyone seems to be intent on observing their restrictions. They all know that they're there in all of our best interests, seeking to win this battle against coronavirus. So Galway is doing okay, as is our most other parts of the country. Galway, perhaps in terms of its economy, is probably more seriously affected than other parts of the country, because Galway is hugely reliant on tourism. Tourism is a major part of the economy here in Galway City, Connemara, even stretching down into County Clare, into the Burn, and so on. So it has been, I suppose, uniquely impacted by that, as of places like Kerry and Cork and perhaps Dublin City. So when tourism is such a major part of your economy, you do feel the brunt of the restrictions a little bit more.
Now, your official title is Minister of State at the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, with special responsibility for the diaspora and international development. How much of your time, or I suppose all of your time, is probably taken up with making sure that people, Irish people living abroad, are getting what they need support-wise from the government? Is that the idea of the job?
Very much so, Gerard. This role was first created by Enda Kenny back in 2011 in recognition of the fact that we have this extraordinary Irish community of about 70 million people all over the world. And he felt that it was necessary that they would have, you know, special representation, somebody advocating on their behalf, somebody charged with looking after their welfare. So that unit was set up within the Department of the Taoiseach in 2011, and then perhaps appropriately it was moved over to the Department of Foreign Affairs ultimately, which has this wonderful network of embassies and consulates throughout the world who were already dealing with and supporting our Irish communities, but now with a much greater focus. And then within the Department of Foreign Affairs, there was a unit created, a team of people whose sole focus was our diaspora community. That's called the Global Irish Unit. So I work alongside them in looking after the welfare of that 70 million people all over the world. It's an incredibly powerful community that we have. And there are a number of reasons why we should engage actively with that community. First of all, to look after one another, look after one another's welfare, and then see how we can work in one another's interests, both in the interests of these communities around the world and in the interests of Ireland here on the edge of Europe. So the role was created in 2011. Jimmy Deanahan was the first minister.
Oh, yeah.
Then Joe McHugh took over the role, and then I took over the role then in 2016.
And it's obviously one that you're settled into nicely. And going forward, we'll talk about going forward in a little while. But is it something you'd like to continue to do?
It certainly is. Mm. I've enjoyed it immensely. I've travelled all over the world visiting our Irish communities. We still are just on the cusp of producing a new diaspora policy within the Department of Foreign Affairs, that Global Irish Unit. So in order to come up with the best possible policy ideas as to how we better support our Irish communities around the world, I visited those Irish communities along with some of my colleagues from the department. We were in the UK, all over the UK, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, the US, where we have the largest Irish community and the most well-organized Irish communities, and sat down with them sometimes over a day to hear of their ideas as to how we can best support the community in the future. So it's a role I've enjoyed immensely. When you do go abroad and see the strength of our Irish communities around the world and how they work themselves to support one another in situ, you go home with a deep sense of pride of what it means to be Irish. So it's been an immensely enjoyable role. And yes, I would like to continue in that role, but of course, ultimately, that's up to the incoming Taoiseach to decide who occupies these new ministerial roles.
All right. Now, when this COVID-19 situation occurred in Spain, I was in Spain and was scheduled to travel home on the 19th of March for 2 weeks anyway. So I came home on the 19th. And around that time and for a number of weeks afterwards, there was a big push to get Irish people who wanted to get back to Ireland home. Yes. Are there still people abroad who would like to be at home but can't get there? Are you working with those, if there are?
We are, Ger. So far, since you came home, we've gotten about 5,000 people home from all over the world. And what that ultimately has entailed, in some instances, something as simple as making them aware of the remaining scheduled flights that were actually in the air and operating, to, in some other cases, for example, in Peru, we had a number of people stretched across rural Peru.
That's right,
And it became very difficult to get to them. So they had to avail of public transport. That took a few days to get them all to Lima. And then we had to work with Britain and a couple of other EU countries to make sure there was a flight available from Lima. So it's been a gargantuan task across all of our embassy and consulate networks to get those 5,000 people home. But there are still people abroad, still anxious to get home. And the opportunities, unfortunately, your timing was impeccable in that you decided to come home on the 19th, because options even between Europe and Ireland have become increasingly sparse since then. We're working all the time. What we have done is, as we always do, advise our Irish people travelling abroad to register with the embassy of whatever location they're in. Mm-hmm. They then are aware they're there. And then if opportunities in terms of travelling home arise, they can contact them instantly. So we've seen in the last, certainly, month, normally a lot of Irish people travelling abroad wouldn't see any reason or any need to connect with the embassy or the consulate, but they've done so now. And we've seen huge numbers swelling in terms of that communication. And it's been, again, this was an opportunity for people to become more aware of Ireland's diplomatic network around the world and how that network can work in their favour when they need it to.
Indeed. And we've been hearing stories from a lot of countries around the world, how businesses have adapted or have had to change their MO and have had to alter, you know, the way they do business. It's the very same, really, for the embassies, the Irish embassies across the world, because I know that last week, the government, you reinforced your support for particularly the vulnerable people, you know, elderly people, maybe the undocumented, those who have lost their livelihoods. And the embassies are really on the front line in this, aren't they?
Completely, soldier. And I have to say, and I would have known the people, the vast majority of the people working in our missions around the world, They have done incredible work. And these are people that at times simply do not sleep because, you know, for example, if you look at the embassies, our embassy in Canberra and our consulate in Sydney, they would have been working with HQ back in Dublin to get over 1,000 people home from Australia. And because of the time difference, that obliged our Australian team to work late into the night and sometimes early morning to get the people in the air. So, yes, our embassies, as normal, will be very, very well connected with Irish community organisations around the world. That's part of their role. But they've seen that job now come to the fore, that work coming to the fore, and those links that they have established over the years proving really, really useful in terms of looking after, as you describe them, our most vulnerable. If you can imagine the UK, for example, mm-hmm. we would have a lot of elderly Irish people living on their own in the UK. And they would be looked after in the main by Irish community organisations, which some of which have been in existence for over 50 or 60 years. And we fund them. The Irish people, the Irish taxpayer, funds Irish community organisations around the world to the tune of 13 million euro per annum. So a lot of that money now is being channeled towards ensuring that all of those elderly people, no matter where they live in the world, are looked after, are communicated with, are, you know, they're not forgotten. And, and that, in essence, is really what this is about, ensuring that nobody's left behind, that our most vulnerable, no matter where they find themselves in the world, know that when they pick up the phone or drop an email, there's someone there on the end to respond and to support them. And that's a really, really important part of the role for our embassy and consulate network around the world.
And not only the embassies are, you know, who are at the front line, but you're hearing stories, and you've gone on record as saying that Irish people across the world who are still abroad are working within their communities to make a difference for those less fortunate in their own communities. And that's lovely, isn't it?
It is, Ger. And, you know, I keep using the word mehel, and I'm sure you were, when you were born and raised in County Clare, you were.
Well, I was born and raised in Limerick, actually. I'm in Clare longer than I was in Limerick,
You're well familiar with the concept of the mehel. When I was growing up in rural East Galway, when the hay was to be made or the harvest done or whatever it might be, the mehel came on board. All your neighbours came in to help. And really, that spirit of the mehel has really been reawakened in our Irish communities around the world. Everybody rowing in to support the most vulnerable. We've seen the GAA, for example, doing powerful work around the world. GAA Club is becoming the hub, if you want, for those Irish communities. People, again, charting where every single vulnerable member of an Irish community is, be it in Boston, be it in Los Angeles, wherever it might be, and ensuring that those people are taken care of and are looked after in terms of food, in terms of their mental well-being, in terms of just knowing that there's somebody there on their side. So that spirit of the mehel, that spirit of what Irish community means, has been so prevalent and so important in our work around the world, from everywhere, from Madrid, we've seen it all across Europe. And again, those places where we find the Irish congregation around the world, even our new communities, for example, in the Middle East, in Doha and Qatar and Abu Dhabi and Dubai, again, predominantly through the GAA, I have to say, they've been doing incredible work. So this is the Irish at our best. When we are challenged in terms of supporting one another, we always succeed in making that support happen.
One of the things that is a huge challenge, and in a funny way sometimes it's talked about, but in a very serious way as well, the challenge of keeping children occupied while they're on effectively on lockdown. I live in an area where there's a lot of people passing, and you see young children on tricycles and bicycles and scooters, and you just feel my three children are grown and they're young adults, so I'm quite fortunate. But in your address or your statement on the Global Irish Newsletter, you talked about the Children's Family Tree. What's that?
One of the organisations we work with in the Department of Foreign Affairs is an organisation called Ireland Reaching Out. It was founded by a gentleman called Mike Feerick and a few others down around, not far from County Clare in Portumna, down in southeast Galway.
Right.
And it was, in essence, to connect Irish people around the world with the community from whence their ancestors came. So if you're living in Brisbane, right, and you somehow have an inkling that your grandfather, your great-grandfather came from Kilfenora.
Right.
And that you could actually connect with a person or a team of people in Kilfenora to say, you know, my grandfather left in 1846.
Right.
I know for a fact that he came. Could you enlighten me a little bit more?
Okay.
And ultimately, what this organization has done now is established a team of volunteers in thousands of parishes around Ireland, and then to connect our people around the world back to those communities. So one of the things that Ireland Reaching Out has done during the COVID crisis is to allow an opportunity for Irish people around the world to trace their ancestry. And there's a lot of really good advice on their website. Just Google Ireland Reaching Out. It's all there. as to how we can successfully trace your grandparents, great-grandparents. And they've created a wonderful little tool or resource for children who want to, for the first time, because a lot of children don't have the time or sometimes don't have the interest of creating their family tree. So you can go into Ireland Reaching Out, and just if you just Google Ireland Reaching Out Children's Family Tree, it's there. And you can print off a wonderful family tree and then start just filling in the names, going right back as many generations as you can go. And again, they point to resources that are available online for you to do that research. So again, it's an opportunity when a lot of our children have some spare time to figure out where they came from, where their ancestors came from, and again, develop that deep sense of connection with Ireland.
There is so much happening in the background that we're not aware of, but your statement is timed beautifully to reassure not just even those of us abroad, but those of us at home, that there is a lot happening, that nobody is actually being forgotten about. And the wheels of government, they're still turning, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, they are. The wheels of government are still turning. And, you know, we hear people intermittently using the phrase caretaker government.
Yes.
Well, I would argue this is a caring government at this point in time. That's ultimately its role, is to look after the welfare of our people, both here on the island of Ireland and indeed around the world. So the government remains in place until such time as the next government is appointed, and hopefully that will happen quite soon. All the ministers remain in place, and all those ministers are being incredibly proactive in each of their respective roles in trying to do the very best they can in caring for and looking after the welfare of our people around the world.
I do think it's amazing that some ministers who are sitting around the cabinet table and are party to decisions that are being made are no longer even TDs. And I know they're obliged, I know that, but none of them are coming across as being, I'm obliged to do this. Everybody is putting the shoulder to the wheel, getting on with it. And if I can ask you, because I will be talking later in the programme about the government formation. Last week, your party, Fine Gael, and Fianna Fáil agreed a document or a way forward, and you've sent that to the smaller parties. How long do you think this is going to take, and how optimistic are you that, or would Fine Gael be in general, that you'll get the additional seats that you need for the overall majority?
Well, first of all, Ger, I hope it doesn't take very long more. My own personal opinion is that we'll somehow, hopefully, have this resolved within the next 4 weeks.
Right.
4 to 6 weeks. Let's be optimistic but realistic, which I always try to be. You see, we have to breach this magical figure of 80. We need a minimum of 80 seats in order to have a properly functioning government.
Yes.
And certainly Fine Gael and indeed Fianna Fáil have expressed the opinion that it needs to be substantially more than that, so that any one grouping or entity can't hold the other remaining entities to ransom anytime during the lifetime of the next government. Because this next government has a really, one might argue, yes, a tough task in terms of bringing Ireland back to full health, both in terms of its societal needs and in terms of its economic needs after the challenge is over. But also, I think, a time when we perhaps have an opportunity to look at things differently and do things differently. And one of the opening lines in that document that was agreed upon by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, in essence, says that. It says we cannot go back to the way things were before. We have to look at the governing of our country in a very, very different way to reflect how challenging the time ahead is. But also, perhaps we've been given a kind of a blank canvas, I would argue, and so many exciting and necessary things have happened in the last 4 weeks that nobody thought possible. For example, we now have thousands of Irish people working very effectively from their homes. I'm calling you from my home today. I have not left my home for the last 2 weeks, and yet I've had meetings with people from Fiji, from New York, from Brussels, from Denmark, in my role as I'm also the Irish Minister for our International Development, our Irish Aid Programme overseas. I've had all those meetings sitting in my office here in my home in County Galway. So again, I just think there are opportunities presenting to us, and we've been forced to think differently about how we govern our country and how our country functions. So I think the incoming government will have an opportunity to be able to continue thinking differently about how we govern in the future. So it's a challenging time, but it's also an exciting time. And I would like to see, as I say, the next government in place in the next 4 to 6 weeks. The really challenging part of this, Jerry, is that once we get the parties in place and hopefully agree a programme of government across all those different unique parties, each of them respectively has to go back to its membership to approve that programme of government before we can all sign on the dotted line. And for me, that perhaps may be the most challenging aspect of it all in terms of the time necessary to do that and the need to convince all the membership of the merits of doing this in the future.
All right. You have been extremely kind and generous with your time today. I appreciate it. Thank you for talking us through your statement to the diaspora. And just very finally, if somebody abroad is listening to this and they are in some way in difficulty, I presume you would suggest to them just go to your nearest embassy or contact your local embassy and go from there.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking in Spain, Ambassador Sheila Maguire and our team in Madrid.
Oh, terrific.
A phenomenal job. And yeah. That's replicated throughout the world. So contact us, Google wherever you are in the world, Google where your local Irish embassy is, drop them an email, make a phone call. They're ready and willing and able to help you. And can I just say to you as well, Jira, because it's funny, again, in this role of Minister for the Diaspora, I've had the opportunity, the privilege of being able to talk to so many people around who broadcast so effectively to our Irish community across the world, no matter where they find themselves. And you yourself are providing an incredibly important line of communication for our people. And again, you are one of our community builders. So thanks to you and to the many others who broadcast to our people around the world. It's a very, very important function that you perform.
As we say in the parish, Deneda. And on that jolly note, I will leave you Minister of State for the Diaspora and International Development and a whole pile of other things as well. Ciarán Cannon in Galway. Thank you for taking time to talk to us today. Lovely to talk to you and well done.
Likewise, Ger. Thank you.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome to the final part of the programme. I did mention at the top that I was going to try and play a song called Stay at Home and Stay Alive. And it's a song that reminds us how important it is to stay at home. We are in lockdown, partially in Ireland and very forcibly in Spain. And we do, as I said, have a lot more liberty here in Ireland. But we are still in a lockdown scenario. We can only go 2 kilometres from our house, essential journeys only. And this particular song was written by Nathan Carter. And it's based on an article that was written by Father Brian Darcy. Now, Nathan Carter isn't Irish. He's from Liverpool, but spends a lot of time in County Fermanagh and indeed touring Ireland as well. But he read this article by Father Darcy, and he mentioned in the article, Father Darcy did, that somebody should write a song about this particular time. So anyway, Nathan Carter got this idea and made a few phone calls to people like Brian Kennedy, Johnny Logan, Chloe Agnew, Tommy Fleming, Sean Kane, and said, lads, I've written a song. Can we all do this? And they did it from their living rooms or their home studios. And I thought, well, let's bring it to you today on the programme. Here it is.
I never thought I'd see the day when I can't shake your hand. It's something that I'd love to do. I hope you understand. But there's a war we're fighting. It's breaking all our hearts. And that's the reason why we got to stay 6 feet apart. So when I tell you stay away, I don't mean to offend. It's because I care for you. You know you are my friend.
We salute those heroes who have saved many lives. Dedicated army, they fill our hearts with pride.
We all want to help them, just let them lead the way. And help to say a prayer to keep them safe every day. So when I tell you stay away, I don't mean to offend. It's because I care for you, you know you are my friend. We're all in this together, you and I.
Stay at home, and stay alive. Stay at home.
I
nice song, isn't it? Reminding us to stay at home, stay alive, and basically protect ourselves and each other by doing so. Written by Nathan Carter, but you also heard on that Brian Kennedy, Johnny Logan, Chloe Agnew, Tommy Fleming, Sean Kane, and the whole idea, as I said, came from an article by Father Brian Darcy some time ago. And that's on release at the moment in Ireland, and I just thought I should bring it to you today. Now joining me on the phone to talk to me a little bit about government formation in Ireland is Ben Sweeney. Ben, good to talk to you as always.
Evening, Ger. How are you?
I'm in top form, I'm glad to say. Government formation, we went to the polls 11 weeks ago, Ben. As we all know, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil have agreed to go into a super coalition, in inverted commas, but they're still 8 seats short, so they're looking for those 8 seats. A lot of people are saying that the agreement between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael is really the end of civil war politics in Ireland.
It is, yeah. And I mean, to give context there, we would have talked about it before the election. The two historically big parties were Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil coming out of that civil war. They always seem to be the two that definitely can't go in together. You know, they're seen by people outside the party as, you know, not that different when it comes down to it, but grassroots, they have this divide, yes, that just can't be bridged. So the fact now that they've made this agreement to go into power together for the sake of national interest or however they might put it, is a very historic day. Now, they're still short, which is the problem. And I suppose if you look at elections maybe even 10 or 15 years ago, to think that the traditional two big parties could come together and still not have enough for a majority, it's kind of shocking. But it's been a very slow process to even get them to agree on that policy document, which they've now sent out to the smaller parties. And really what we're seeing today and for this week, the story will be that they're just trying to recruit enough people to get to that number of 80 with minimum, which would give them a majority in the Dáil.
Now, we know they're not going to talk to Sinn Féin. So who are the likely partners in this super coalition?
It looks like it's going to be one of two options, if not both together. So the mix they could have is the Green Party, who have 12 seats. They are a likely partner. Now, they have been the most talked about potential partner. They're meeting remotely, or they have been meeting remotely today. They seem to be fairly keen on the policy document that the two parties put together to float out. They say they're looking on carbon emissions and housing are the two main issues they need more clarity on, but indications are good there that they might be interested in going in. Of course, historically as well, we saw Green Party go in with Fianna Fáil before, and it didn't end well for the Green Party, but I suppose it's a different time and it's a different sort of necessity now. The other option that has some sort of logic behind it is a group of independents. So there's three groupings of independents, as contradictory as that is. So one of them has eight TDs, one has six and one has five. If they could get the eight TDs, which is the regional group, then you would have the majority. But of course, the preferred thing, as we've heard already in the programme, is that the Green Party and maybe a group of independents could come together and give them a fairly strong majority, then they're not just relying on one particular group.
And how are they going to do this? Because we know that the Dáil chamber isn't big enough for everybody to sit 2 metres apart. How are they going to get all of the TDs into the chamber or a chamber and have a vote?
Yeah, because we've seen that it's been a case where they've been using a third of the TDs and they've been kind of rotating who's in there to allow for social distancing, but that doesn't count. You can't do that when you're electing a TD or when there's budgetary matters. So they were looking at this way of doing some sort of video conference, but they decided then that would be unconstitutional because it wouldn't allow for parliamentary privilege. So what they're going to have to do now is house them in the convention centre, which is the country's biggest convention centre, obviously, in Dublin.
But that's along the quays
Along the quays, yeah. It's going to cost a lot of money, though. They reckon in the area of about €250,000 to get it kitted up. It's a very stark amount of money. And then €50,000 a day thereafter for the sitting of the Dáil and the Seanad. They're going to need to do that for the election of a Taoiseach, like I said, budgetary matters, anything that requires some legislative change, where you'll have all the TDs there. One example I heard is that the budget for the Department of Social Welfare will be expired by June at the rate we're going. That needs to have a Dáil sitting to approve it. Same with the Department of Health, will be out of money by September, given the current guidelines. That needs to be changed as well, but they can't do that unless they have everyone together. So they'll have to spend €50,000 to gather everyone for that day to do that vote.
That's incredible. Okay, let's talk a little bit about COVID-19. Not a whole lot has changed. We're still effectively in lockdown. We can go for our walk to 2 kilometres and back. Necessary journeys are being allowed. people are getting a bit antsy now and they're looking to kind of get a date for release, if you can put that in inverted commas. And nursing homes have been the major focus of testing.
Yeah, I suppose the government kind of missed the boat a small bit, and that's some of the criticism they've been getting. They initially were slow to say, don't worry about, you know, visiting nursing homes, it's perfectly safe. And now we're seeing a severe concentration of cases in nursing homes. They've been trying to get PPE in there, as we've been discussing. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to kind of ramp up the testing they do as well. And as you say, the backlog, they say it's been pretty much cleared at this stage. That is one of the main areas they need to tackle now, because the hospitals, with their PPE and the spaces they can have, are kind of managing quite well. You mentioned as well, people leaving the house. As it stands, the date we have for the current restrictions is the 5th of May. It's likely we're going to see some sort of extension. They're still very uncertain how anything is going to go. I think they're probably playing it a bit smart by not saying what will happen at any particular time.
Yes.
So as not to be, you know, giving any sort of false hopes. But one of the big talking points is the state exams, which were due to be held in June, which have now been delayed until probably some stage in August, if they can go ahead at all. So that's a big issue now, because college places are decided by how you do in that state exam, which is called the Leaving Cert. Mm-hmm. But in terms of people day-to-day getting out, if you see it extended again for a number of weeks after the 5th of May, you'd worry about people losing patience and starting to kind of flout that.
And speaking of that, the economy is obviously something very important. We've just mentioned it a few minutes ago ourselves. I was taking a look online today and I saw on the journal.ie that an advisor to the central bank has said that a supplementary charge or a COVID charge could be applied to such things as the cost of a meal in a restaurant. And that particular economist, a man by the name of Alan Ahern, was suggesting that maybe 10 euro of a charge on top of the price of a meal in a pub or in a restaurant, or maybe a euro on a pint in a pub. I don't think people are going to wear that, would they?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Obviously, we're hearing quite a lot of talk about how we're supposed to try and get through this economically afterwards. Kind of a blanket charge on a meal, I don't know how people will respond to that, because, I mean, are you eating for one or are you eating for 10? 10 or over 10 people, it wouldn't be too bad. But in terms then of price per pint, a euro mm-hmm. on top of that, look, we're having all the speculation, but we still don't know when restaurants and pubs will reopen. As it happens, actually, talking about restaurants, a lot of them have kind of adapted. And recently, in particular, the last week, we've seen a lot of restaurants opening up for now just takeaways.
That's right.
So their logic there, and I've heard a few of them interviewed, is that, look, if we can get through, we're not going to make money during this, but if we can pay the overhead, so we're not coming out of this with a severe amount of debt, then that would do. But I mean, that suggestion of a blanket charge is probably just one of very many that we're going to hear before we're out of this.
All right. Ben Sweeney, as always, great to talk to you. Look forward to chatting to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Jerry.
On the 4th of July, 1806, we set sail from the sweet cove of Cork. We were sailing away with a cargo of bricks for the Grand City Hall in New York. 'Twas a wonderful craft, she was rigged for the nap, and oh how the wild wind drove her. She stood several blasts, she had 27 masts, and they called her the Irish Rover.
We had 1 million bags of the best loyal rags, we had 2 million barrels of snow. We had 3 million sides of our blind horses' hides, we had 4 million barrels of bones. We had 5 million hogs, 6 million doves, 7 million barrels of porter. We had 8 million piles of old nanny ghost tiles, and a hold of the Irish Rover.
There was old Mickey Coote, who played hard on his flute when the ladies lined up for a set. He was tootle with skill for each sparkling quadrille, till the dancers were flutered and bet. With his smart, witty talk, he was cock of the walk, as he rolled the dames under and over. They all knew at a glance, when he took up his stance, that he sailed in the Irish Rover.
of the lead. I was Hogan from Jersey to home. There was Johnny McGurk, who was scared stiff of work, and a man from Westmead come along. There was Slugger O'Toole, who was drunk as a rule, and fighting Bill Tracy from Dover. And your man McCann from the banks of the Bund was the skipper on the Irish Rover. For the sailor, it's always the bother in life. It's so lonesome by night and by day that he longs for the shore and the charming young whore who will melt all his troubles away. All the noise and the rout, swilling, putting and stout, for him soon is done and over. Of the love of a maid, he is never afraid, and out salt from the Irish Rover. We have sailed 7 years when the measles broke out, and the ship lost its way in the fog. And that whale of a crew was reduced out to two, just myself and the captain's old dog. And the ship struck a rock, oh Lord, what a shock, the boat it was turned right over. Turned nine times around, and the poor old dog was drowned. And the last of the Irish Rover.
That's absolutely fabulous, isn't it? It comes from the Pogues and the Dubliners, and that's a song that's called The Irish Rover, as if you didn't know. And the reason I'm playing that particular song is because it was on this day back in 1987 that that song was at number one in Ireland, or Irish number one for this week. Now, I want to tell you about next week. During the week, I was talking to George Lee. And you remember George from the G2 summits and all that. And we were chatting about things that we have learned and discovered and, you know, kind of basically come to understand during the lockdown period and indeed throughout the whole COVID-19 pandemic. And I said, you know what we'll do? We'll have a chat about maybe the 10 things that you, as in George himself, have learned over the last number of weeks. And so we were going to do that today. However, I don't have time enough to do it justice because I want to have a chat with him about the 10 things. And there's some lovely ones in there. There's some funny ones in there as well. But I just thought as well, seeing as we're going to hold that over until next week, that if you wanted to get involved, you would be more than welcome to do so. You can email, let's say, the top 10 things that you have learned while the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdown has been in place. It could be a simple thing like that you really enjoy the company of your family. It could be that you have discovered, like, for instance, TRE. Yeah, a lot of people have discovered Talk Radio Europe because we tend to turn to the radio when we need information and information that we can rely on. I know the internet is there, but generally with all radio stations and TV stations, particularly the good ones, all of the information is checked before it's sent out. So people know that when they turn on the radio, they get the information, and what they hear is, for the most part, exactly what the official story is. And with that, I will say hello to all of our new listeners to Talk Radio Europe. I know that you have been texting and emailing and calling in your droves, so I just wanted to say a big welcome to you all, and thank you very much for choosing Talk Radio Europe. I did mention before that if you are one of those new listeners, don't forget we have a fabulous website, tre.radio. You can have an old look there and see what's on, and you get links to commercial enterprises, you get links to books, you get lots and lots of information, access to podcasts, and you can listen back to programs. And of course, we have our Facebook page, which is Talk Radio Europe Official. So have a look at that as well, and sure, give it an old like. Absolutely, why don't you? So anyway, there you go. If you would like to get in contact with this program, and if you would like to take part in the 10 things that you have learned during the COVID-19 pandemic, you can email me, ger@tre.radio. All right, ger@tre.radio. Simple as that. Now, actually, while I'm talking to you about things about Talk Radio Europe, coming up after the programme at 7 o'clock tonight, Digital Planet and Tech Tent from the BBC an hour of the latest tech talk on TRE. And I suppose we're turning to tech in a huge abundance, I would imagine, over the last number of weeks. From 8 o'clock then, the BBC Newsroom, followed by World Business Report at 8.30. And then at 9 o'clock, we join the BBC World Service until tomorrow morning when Hannah will be in for Daybreak. And Alexander Marcus is the director of Rafa International School in Mallorca, in the grounds of the Rafa Nadal Academy. The school provides education for boys and girls across the world, aged 3 to 18 years, whether they play tennis or not. And Hannah will be talking to Alexander Marcus tomorrow morning, something to listen into. And of course, being Tuesday, Giles will be in. He won't have his panel in studio. He hasn't had for many weeks. The virtual viewpoint, no panel, as I said, but he'll be talking to various guests. And of course, you are invited to have your say too. You can give Giles a buzz from 10 o'clock tomorrow morning on 952-78-4000. So there we go. One of the things that I like when I'm filling in for other people, the good old days, is that people ask for Irish artists. And you know, one of the most requested Irish artists is this duo. I wouldn't have thought it if you had said it to me 2 years ago, but I'm going to play a track from them. Here's Foster and Allen.
In a little village, not many miles away, there lived a rich and aged man whose hair was turning grey. He had three sons, the only ones, but Jack and Tom were sly. Ted was honest as could be, and would not tell a lie. They did their best to ruin Ted right in the old man's eyes. Soon their lies began to work, and Ted was much despised. One night the old man said, "Begone, you're heartless to the core." These were the words that a young lad said as he stood beside the door. "Don't be angry with me, Dad, don't turn me from your door. I know that I've been wayward, but I won't be anymore. Give me just another chance and put me to the test. You'll find that the black sheep loves his dad far better than the rest." Year after year passed slowly on, and the rich man's now grown old. He called together Jack and Tom and gave them both his gold, saying, "I'll only need a little room right at your fireside." Then one night Jack, returning home, he brought with him a bride. His wife began to hate their father more and more each day. One night he heard the three declare that he was in their way. They then agreed to send him to a workhouse that was near. And like a flash, the black sheep's words came ringing in his ear. "Don't be angry with me, Dad, don't turn me from your door. I know that I've been wayward, but I won't be anymore. Give me just another chance and put me to the test. You'll find that the black sheep loves his dad far better than the rest." A carriage pulled up to the door, it was the workhouse van. The lads then turned unto their dad and said, here is your man. Just then a manly form appeared, and pushing through the crowd, stand back, you brutes, the stranger cried, this will not be allowed. You took this old man's property and all that he had saved. You even sold his little plot containing mother's grave. I am his son, but not your kin, from this till judgment day. The old man clasped the black sheep's hand, and the crowd all heard him say, don't be angry with me, lad, though I turned you from my door. I know that I was foolish, but I won't be anymore. I should have given you my gold, for you have stood the test. I found the black sheep loves his dad far better than the rest.
That's Foster McDonald, and a song called The Black Sheep. And as I said beforehand, Foster McDonald, one of the most requested groups or artists, Irish artists, that I have come across by Talk Radio Europe listeners. Now, just a reminder, if you want to get involved with what we're doing next week on the programme, I'll be talking to George Lee about 10 things that he has learned during the COVID-19 pandemic, and some interesting ones in there, as I said. If you would like to send me your 10, I would love to hear from you. You can do that by email, which is ger@tre.radio, and try and get them into me before the weekend so we can have a look at them in advance. I usually spend most of the weekend getting the programme ready, so it'd be nice to hear from you in advance of that, if we could at all. Alrighty, I think that's my lot for today. I want to say thank you very much to the guests on the programme today. Thank you to Minister Kieran Cannon for talking to us about the diaspora and the efforts that the Irish government is making to make sure that they're included and looked after in these difficult times. Thanks to Ben as well for giving us an update on the government formation in Ireland. I certainly look forward to that. And I think, as the minister said a little earlier on, it could take anything from 4 to 6 weeks from this part, or from this next phase of the process. So fingers crossed that we can get that done fairly quickly. As always, can I say a big thank you to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, that is Jose Antonio Sierra. Thank you, Jose Antonio, for always keeping an eye out for things that we can include in the programme. I was also going to try and fit in something from Patricia Traynor today, but that just didn't happen either. So there you go. Look, that's my lot for today, as I said. Look after yourselves in the coming week. Keep it right here on Talk Radio Europe, because there is plenty coming up to keep you entertained for the evening. And look forward to your company next week. Until then, from me, Ger Sweeney, look after yourselves and each other. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.